Privileged CPU features are incredibly powerful. Of course, it's obvious that kernels, that it's essential in using these features to implement kernels. But in fact, there are several other compelling use cases. So I have just a few examples here. We could speed up garbage collection performance by accessing the page table and using memory access information. We could improve privilege separation within a single process by configuring MMU hardware to create separate isolated compartments. Or we could even run safe native code in a web browser by using privilege mode hardware and intercepting system calls and denying potentially harmful operations. So the common thread that spans across all three of these examples is that we're really using privileged CPU features at user level instead of to build kernels. So let's consider garbage collection as a specific illustrative example. So suppose we wanted to build a faster garbage collector. And in order to do it, we needed access to privileged CPU features, in this case, the page table. So the traditional approach would be to modify the kernel. So we could just implement a kernel patch, and that would provide us with a new interface that allows us to manipulate the page table. But unfortunately, there are a lot of drawbacks to this approach. First of all, we're changing the kernel just to benefit a single application. But if we inadvertently introduce a bug, well, then we could compromise the integrity of our entire system. And not only that, but it's really challenging to distribute kernel changes, and it's kind of unreasonable to change the kernel every time we have a new mechanism or a new idea for using a privileged CPU feature. So what else could we do? Well, in fact, there's a large body of research that has attempted to address exactly those types of concerns, in general, extensible OSs. On this slide, I have a specific example, the exokernel, and what you can see here is we might be able to get better garbage collection performance by implementing a custom garbage collection library OS. But unfortunately, there are drawbacks to this approach too. We've completely redesigned the kernel, and as a result, we're essentially discarding our entire OS stack and starting from scratch. So it's probably unreasonable to throw away millions of lines of code. What else could we try? Well, another option is virtualization. So virtualization really gets us half of the way there, right? Because a hypervisor is exposing a machine interface, and as a result, we're getting direct access to these privileged CPU features that interest us. So what we could do is we could implement a custom kernel for garbage collection, and maybe that speeds up the performance of our garbage collection by using these privileged CPU features. But unfortunately, we still have a really big problem, and that is that virtual machines are strictly partitioned. So we might get better garbage collection performance, but now because we had to run a JVM in a separate virtual machine to do it, well, we can no longer run Java applets in our web browser. It's really complicated and difficult for these two virtual machines to communicate with each other. So this brings us to Dune. So what are we doing in Dune? Well, really two kind of straightforward things. First, we're going to provide safe user-level access to privileged CPU features. So what does that give us? Well, it allows us to no longer modify the kernel, because if we need to use a privileged CPU feature, we can just access it directly inside the application. And second of all, we're not going to change anything else. We're just going to provide a normal process in all ways. So full POSIX API, everything's provided by the kernel. You can perform open read or write, receive signals, et cetera. And this addresses the other two limitations. In the case of virtualization, we no longer have this strict partitioning. All of our applications are just running under a single kernel, so they can share memory or communicate over Unix domain sockets. And in the case of extensible OSs, well, we're really not changing the OS much at all. We're just using the existing services that are provided by the kernel. And really the key idea here is we're going to leverage all the existing virtualization hardware to accomplish this. And of course, virtualization hardware is ubiquitous. It's probably available in almost every laptop in this room. And what's really interesting here is we're going to configure virtualization hardware very differently from the approach that's typically taken by a VMM or a hypervisor. What we're going to do is we're going to use it to expose access to this privileged CPU feature safely. But at the same time, we're going to expose a POSIX abstraction instead of emulating a full machine. So back to our original garbage collection example, if we wanted to build a faster garbage collector, and now we're using Dune, well, how would we do it? Well, in fact, it's almost trivial. We could just reference the page table directly in our process, it configure it any way we would like, and in fact, it's only a memory reference to change that page table. instead of a system call. So it's really, really easy. And an interesting thing to notice here is that we actually have two page tables, one for the kernel and one for the guest, in this case, our Dune application. So it's completely safe. Our Dune app can configure the page table any way that suits its needs, and the kernel will always have its separate page table configuration. As I progress further through the talk, I'll elaborate on more further details on how this mechanism works. All right, so I've given kind of the motivation for creating Dune, and I've even provided an example of how you might go about using Dune. So now let's take a look at the design of Dune and get into some of the details. So first of all, a reasonable question is, which privileged CPU features can we actually expose to a user program? And as it turns out, we're really only limited by the capabilities of virtualization hardware. In the case of Dune, we're using VTX, which is Intel's virtualization extension, and it allows us to make available really four kind of general classes of privileged CPU operations. On this slide, I've also provided the corresponding x86 instructions. So each of these privileged x86 instructions can actually be run in user space when using Dune. But let's just talk about kind of the broad concepts here. So first of all, privilege modes. Well, it's an incredibly useful feature for isolating or sandboxing untrusted components. And not only that, but it has this really useful system call mechanism for transitioning between trusted and untrusted domains. And virtual memory, as I mentioned, there's the page table, and you can modify it with memory references, but there's actually a lot more hardware mechanism when referring to virtual memory. For example, there are privileged instructions that permit management of the TLB. And we also expose exceptions, which is kind of cool because a user-level process could get notifications for things like divide by zero or invalid opcode, floating point overflow, or even a page fault. And it's extremely efficient. It's just however fast hardware can deliver it, it's delivered directly to the user program. And then finally, we're able to provide access to segmentation hardware. Now, of course, segmentation is kind of a legacy mechanism on x86, but nonetheless, it is occasionally useful, and it's available and complements virtual memory. Okay, so I've discussed the privileged hardware features that we make available, so now let's take a little bit more look at how Dune works. So first of all, as I mentioned, we're using virtualization hardware. And the way virtualization hardware works is it actually breaks the CPU into two orthogonal operating modes. So I'll discuss each of them. So first, host mode. If you're using Intel terminology, that's referred to as VMX root mode. But for host mode, what it's really normally intended for is running a hypervisor. And in Dune, we're going to use it a little bit differently. We're just going to place the kernel in there. And the reason is that we need access to VTX instructions so that we can configure and manage guest mode. So what is guest mode? Well, guest mode, using Intel terminology, is just VMX non-root mode. And it's normally intended only for running the guest kernel, right, and the guest OS stack. And in the case of Dune, what we're going to do is we're just going to take an ordinary OS process and we're going to run it inside this virtualization guest mode. And the reason is by running inside guest mode, we gain safe access to all these privileged CPU features using exactly the same mechanism that's provided for virtual machines. So I've discussed the operating modes of the underlying hardware. Now let's take a look at software components. So first, let's consider the Dune kernel module. So in order to support Dune, we had to modify the kernel, but kind of surprisingly, it was actually really simple. We just had to make a 2,500 line, roughly speaking, dynamically loadable kernel module. There's no need to recompile a kernel, it just works. And this kernel module is really doing two kind of key things. First, it's configuring and managing the virtualization hardware, in this case, the VTX extensions I referred to. But also, it's responsible for making sure that we're providing that process abstraction. And what that requires is integration with the rest of the kernel. So for example, if the Dune module receives a system call, it's going to forward that system call to the kernel's system call table. If it receives a page fault, it's going to forward that page fault to the kernel's page fault handler. And as I mentioned, our module currently only supports, well, really our implementation currently only supports Intel VTX, which is Intel's virtualization extension for x86. But as it turns out, there are actually a lot of very similar extensions. For example, ARM provides AMD provides SVM for AMD x86 machines, and there are even virtualization extensions available for ARM that could potentially be supported by Dune. Okay, so that's our Dune kernel module. Now let's take a look at libdune. So libdune is really just an untrusted utility library. So it's quite a bit larger, on the order of 10,000 lines of code, but it doesn't matter. It's not trusted code. And what we really use libdune to do is to make it easier for us to implement applications at user level that take advantage of these privileged CPU features. So it's a collection of useful utilities, like the ability to intercept exceptions or system calls. We have a simple page allocator, and we have a bunch of routines for managing and manipulating the page table. So all of the applications that we build in Dune, we build on top of this library. All right, so let's get into some of the nuts and bolts of our Dune kernel module. As I mentioned, what's really interesting here is that we're providing a process abstraction, and that's what differentiates us from a virtual machine. So there are really kind of three key issues here that we have to carefully handle in order to provide a process abstraction. First, we need to provide appropriate memory management. Second, system calls. And finally, POSIX signals. So let's look at each of these in turn. So in the case of memory management, we're really using a standard mechanism that's provided by virtualization hardware. So let's quickly review this. So on the left side of the diagram, we have an ordinary page table, and it's just doing ordinary translations from RAM to some virtual address. But on the right side, we have this kind of new mechanism that's provided by VTX, and what's essentially happening is we're having two layers of address translation. So the first layer is the extended page table, or the EPT, and it's responsible for ensuring safeness and isolation, right? But then the second layer is directly accessible to the guest, the user page table. And in this case, our guest is a Dune process. So the Dune process can just configure that any way it wants for its own functionality. So by doing this, we can maintain security by constraining the memory that's accessible through the extended page table. And then the Dune application is free to use paging in any way it chooses. So this is all really generic virtualization stuff. But what's actually different here in Dune? Well, what's different is how we configure the EPT. So in a normal virtual machine, you really want to expose flat memory. So maybe it starts at address 0 and makes it to address N. And it's just simulating RAM, right? But if we're going to expose a process, we have to do something quite a bit different. The reason is that a typical Linux process has a sparse address-based layout. So we might have code and data somewhere in a low address, and then maybe the stack is in a very high address, and we need to provide both of those. So we configure the EPT to really reflect the full process address space, and that's what we're doing in Dune. And just another quick detail, if an EPT entry is missing, we get something called an EPT violation, and we can actually just forward those violations directly to the kernel's page fault handler. So there's memory management. Now let's take a look at system calls. As I mentioned, we're exposing privilege modes as a hardware feature that is directly available to the process. So as a result, if we try to perform a system call using the standard mechanism, in the case of x86, that's the syscall instruction, well, all that happens is we just trap right back where we started into our process's system call handler. So how can we actually access the kernel? Well, in order to achieve this, we had to use a second mechanism provided by VTX called the vmcall instruction. And really, all this is a hypercall, right? So we've essentially repurposed this hypercall mechanism that's usually used for virtualization, and we're just using it to perform normal Linux system calls instead. So our Dune module will intercept these VM exits caused by the VM call, and it will just forward that request to the kernel system call table. Now, I don't want to give the impression that system calls aren't a useful mechanism. In fact, they're very useful. The reason is that because we're exposing privilege modes to these Dune processes, well, the processes can run code in whatever privilege level they want, right? So a potentially useful configuration is to say, maybe I have some code that I don't trust inside my process. So I'll run that in ring 3, which on x86 is the least privileged mode, right? And as a result, anytime that untrusted code attempts to perform a system call, it's just going to trap into this process level system call handler. And then we're free to implement whatever system call policy we want. And not only that, but we can also ensure that memory protection is also preserved because we can use the supervisor bit in the MMU hardware. So we can essentially say that the Ring 3 code can only modify its own data, but not data that belongs to the rest of the process. All right, so that's a good segue to the final mechanism that we expose in order to support a process abstraction, and that, of course, is POSIX signals. So if we're just running a Dune application normally, well, there's really no issue. We just deliver a signal the way we always would. But things get a little tricky when we're trying to run untrusted code. So suppose we want to deliver something like SIG term to our application because it is about to shut down soon. Well, we really don't want to deliver that SIG term to the untrusted portion of our application because it may just drop it on the floor and not really perform any cleanup. So what we really need is to kind of force a transition back to Ring 0 and to a trusted part of our process in order to handle the signal. And of course, we could have implemented this in our Dune module with a lot of complicated hacking to reconfigure the CPU state to place it back in this privilege mode. But what we realized is there's actually a considerably easier approach, and that is just to leverage a feature that's already provided to us in virtualization hardware, and that is the ability to inject interrupts. So what we could do is we could just inject an interrupt into the process whenever we want to deliver a POSIX signal, and that will automatically force a transition into Ring 0 that's entirely supported by hardware, and then we can just correctly service the signal. And one kind of amusing consequence of adopting this design is that we can actually use CLI and STI, which are the x86 instructions for masking and unmasking interrupts, and we can actually use those to efficiently mask and unmask signals, so kind of cool. And of course, while we were building Dune, we encountered many implementation challenges. I've got just a very quick list here. We went through a ton of effort to really reduce the cost of a VM exit and a VM entry. We're way faster than most typical hypervisors. We had to do a lot of hacking to integrate threads and fork with the kernel. And there were tons of compatibility issues with the way the EPT was set up. It wasn't really the precise hardware mechanism we needed. So we were able to overcome all these challenges, and definitely check out the paper if you'd like to see a more detailed discussion of how we resolve these issues. All right, so I've discussed the design of Dune and some of the nuts and bolts of how it works. So now let's take a look at performance. So I kind of have three performance questions that I'd like to answer during this talk. First of all, how much overhead are we adding by using Dune? Second of all, what kind of potential is there for optimization? And finally, if we consider both overhead and potential for optimization, what kind of end-to-end performance can we get in real applications? So first, let's consider the slowdowns. So we're using virtualization hardware, and of course, that's not completely free. It manifests itself in two types of overhead. So I'll go through them one at a time. So first, let's consider VMX transitions. So what this really means is the time it takes to enter and leave the kernel, or in other words, the time it takes to transition between guest and host mode, right? And what you can see in these micro benchmarks, they're all in cycles, by the way, is that this overhead is visible when we're performing system calls. For example, I've got the getpid system call here, which is an extremely lightweight null system call, essentially performing no work. And you can see that there's a little bit of extra cost introduced by that VMX transition because switching between virtual hardware modes is a little bit more expensive than a regular system call. And that overhead is also manifested in page faults, again, because we have to trap into the kernel in order to service them in certain situations. But let's talk about the other source of overhead. So that's the extended page table overhead. And the reason that the extended page table adds overhead is that whenever we have a TLB miss, the hardware page walker might have to walk two page tables instead of one. It may have to walk the user level page table and the extended page table. So we can see that when that happens, you get a higher cycle count in terms of overhead. Now, on the other hand, there's a ton of really great opportunity for optimization. The reason is we're really just exposing these privileged CPU features directly to applications, and they're free to implement much more efficient mechanisms than what the OS is providing to them. So I've got just a few examples here, again, micro benchmarks. So one thing to consider is ptrace. If you're not familiar, it's just the POSIX mechanism for intercepting and filtering system calls. It's kind of a debug tool. And when we use privilege modes within Dune, we can get a massive improvement in efficiency. The reason is that we can just use this direct hardware mechanism that's already designed to intercept system calls, whereas when we're using ptrace, we're essentially performing all these context switches between the process we're monitoring and a separate monitor process, and that can be very expensive, not to mention the transitions in and out of the kernel. Another example, traps. So what I really mean here is that suppose you wanted to deliver some kind of a notification like SIG-SEGV, a POSIX signal. Well, that's pretty expensive because there's a lot of complexity associated with the POSIX interface. And in Dune, we can just use exception hardware directly to deliver these traps. So it's a lot faster. It's really only limited by the efficiency of hardware. And then finally, let's take a look at virtual memory manipulation. So here I have just two benchmarks that were proposed in the Pell and Lee paper. And what you can see is that we can manipulate virtual memory, things like memory remappings, changing of page protections, extremely efficiently. And again, the reason is that when we want to change the page table inside a Dune application, it's just a memory reference. We're just using the move instruction. So there's no need to jump into the kernel to perform any of these operations. Okay, so we saw the bad news and the good news. So what does this really mean in an end-to-end sense? Well, in order to find out, we actually built three separate systems in our paper. We've got an application sandbox, and it's really designed to constrain system calls that are performed by an untrusted binary. We built a faster garbage collector. We're using dirty bits to essentially determine which pages have been modified. And we built a privilege separation system that allows us to support multiple protection domains within a single process. And it can switch between those protection domains extremely efficiently because we're using tagged TLB hardware to pull this off. And one observation is that it's incredibly simple to leverage these privileged CPU features because of the availability of libdune and our implementation. We can actually kind of graph these privileged CPU operations inside our applications with very, very little code. So I don't have time to talk about the exact performance details of each application, but let's just take a close look at one of them, so the sandbox. So in this case, I'm running Spec 2000 and kind of a null policy, so we're not actually filtering system calls, but just sort of demonstrating the overhead of our mechanism. And what you can see here is essentially percentage slowdown compared to native Linux, 64-bit Linux. And for the most part, our sandbox has very, very little overhead. But there were a couple of outliers. I've highlighted them here. And what we discovered after doing some profiling and performance counter analysis is that this was entirely due to TLB misses. So we were really incurring that extra extended page table cost. And in fact, we were able to eliminate this cost almost entirely through some clever optimization. What we did is whenever large amounts of memory were allocated, as was the case in MCF and AMMP here, we just backed that large memory allocation with large pages. And as a result, the TLB miss rate was considerably reduced. And you can see our results here for our sandbox with large pages. And in fact, it's faster than Linux. It's actually now a speed up. So in order to perform a fair comparison, we modified Linux to use large pages in an identical fashion. And after doing that, basically the performance is identical. So you could say that Spec 2000 is really a compute-bound workload. What happens if we perform I/O? And of course, I/O exercises the system call code path a lot more than the memory code path. So in order to find out, we performed some benchmarks inside our sandbox using a high-performance event-based web server called Lighty. And what we discovered is there was, in fact, some overhead. And this, is due to our VM call overhead, or in other words, our VMX transition costs. But it was relatively minor. It really wasn't that significant. All of the real work was being performed in the kernel's network stack, not transitioning between the application and the network stack. And not as an apples-to-apples comparison, but just to provide greater understanding of Dune, we also measured the exact same workload in VMware Player. And what we found was that the connections per second that we were able to achieve from this web server was dramatically lower. And the reason is that virtualization will typically have two network stacks, one in the guest kernel and one in the host kernel. And the real insight here in Dune is that we're just providing the the services that are available from the regular kernel. So if we want to use the network stack, we just use the kernel's network stack. There isn't this extra layer of indirection. So we're able to get very little performance overhead. So just a quick summary of our other performance results. You can definitely check out the paper for more details. But we were able to get up to 40% improvements in garbage collection performance, and that was a less than 100 line change to an existing garbage collector. We were able to get really fast privilege separation, and it was actually 3 times faster than it would have been if we implemented it by using separate Linux processes, again, because of the tag TLB mechanism. And that was relatively simple to prototype as well. So in conclusion, we really believe that that user programs can truly benefit from access to privileged CPU features. And because of virtualization hardware, we're able to build a system that provides that access safely while still preserving the traditional process semantics. And we think that this is a really great position in the design space, and it creates a lot of exciting new opportunities to build and improve applications, both in terms of performance but also security. And all this can be done without changing the kernel, except for our initial kernel module, which is, of course, a general mechanism. So Dune is completely open source, and if you're curious, we encourage you to download it and give it a try. Our website's here on the slide. Thank you, everyone. Any questions?
Hi, Alec Wallman, Microsoft. I was wondering if you had thought about taking I/O devices that have support for virtualization and making them work with Dune so that, for instance, you could have safe user-level access to a network interface.
Uh-huh. So the question was whether we could expose I/O devices in Dune. And yes, we haven't evaluated this possibility in our paper, but in fact, we think we could. Intel, as just one example, provides VTD, a VTD extension, which is essentially an IOMMU, and that can make it relatively easy for us to safely expose the network devices, storage controllers, directly to user programs. And perhaps the best news is that SRIOV actually permits these IO devices to be partitioned into multiple instances, so we could potentially have more than one Dune process use the same IO device safely.
Hi, Matthew Fernandez, NICTA, and UNSW. Good work. I want to ask, do you have any plans to virtualize the VMCS structs and other extensions you'd need to nest this?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. So we don't have any plans to provide the VMCS structures to Dune applications, and the reason is that our philosophy is to only provide hardware features that can be supported without emulation, because really the benefit that we're getting is running raw bare metal access to these privileged features. But there's also the reverse consideration, and that is, could we run Dune on top of an existing hypervisor, right? And that presents a challenge because the hypervisor is essentially possessing the VTX capability. And we think that this actually is possible, and the reason is because of an OSDI paper from 2010 called Turtles, but by Muli and others, that essentially virtualizes the VTX instruction. So we could leverage that type of capability to actually support Dune with inside a virtual machine. And this isn't something we've evaluated, so the performance implications of such a configuration are kind of an open research question at this point.
Great. Thank you.